welcome to Hawk Weekly.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, a weekly podcast for the haunted attraction and industry. Whether you're an actor, owner, or just plain aficionado, we aim to be a podcast for you. And I stumbled the intro, I know, but I'm having an identity crisis, guys. Look, how the hell did this happen?
I don't know.
What the actual fuck? What? What? I mean, yeah, I'm going to start off swearing this episode. What the fuck happened? What?
I think this is one of those so obvious that we thought we must have done it at least a dozen times.
How? How have we not done this?
I don't know.
I have checked at least a dozen times. I cannot find the episode we did on this. And it drives me bananas because here's the thing. I checked. I have covered this exact topic 3 different times on my day job site, plagiarismtoday.com.
Right.
I have given 3 separate talks at conferences on it. 2 at HauntCon, 1 at Halloween and HauntFest.
Right.
This is my day job, working this exact type of stuff. How did we not do a full episode on it? I know we've touched on it a dozen times.
Yeah.
You want to hear something crazy? Hear something bananas? Do you know what episode 53 of Haunt Weekly was?
No.
Parking. We sat down 70 goddamned episodes ago and did a fucking episode on parking. Mind you, it was a very good episode. You should check it out at hauntweekly.com or at Facebook at Haunt Weekly or Twitter at Haunt Weekly, all that crap. Don't think I forgot that crap. Also, tinyurl.com/hauntweekly is our YouTube channel. The parking episode's there too.
Yes.
70 episodes ago, we did an episode on parking.
But we haven't done
copyright. Just, wow. How?
Yes.
I'm literally blown away. I've been disheveled and lost ever since I learned this.
Earlier tonight.
And I gotta say, we'll lead in real fast with this before we get to the conference reminders. I don't want to credit who said it.
Right.
Who sent the message, because as you get in a minute, he was kind of trying to give a kick in the pants to some people on his team.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't want to throw him under the bus.
Yeah.
But I do want to give credit. We were sent this in a message.
Yeah.
And I'll just read the message. Just a thought / suggestion. My crew is all about the Pennywise animatronic from Transworld. Yeah, we heard all about that too, and we didn't even go to Transworld.
Yeah, I know.
The haunt group's overloaded with that damn animatronic.
Pennywise.
Well, actually, it was just all the Pennywises. It wasn't just even that one.
No, there were several.
But anyways, all about Pennywise. And I can't seem to get it across to them that it's a licensed content and a big no-no without serious dollars to pay for the IP. Might be a good topic for an episode. And then I read that, and I went stumpity stump stump. I'm going to send him the link to the episode we did on this. And then my world kind of fell apart.
Yeah. That sums the evening nicely.
That's been my evening right now. I literally don't know who I am. I feel like a failure of a human being. And I'm drinking some ramen diet, and we're just going to get through this together.
Yeah.
That's what's going to happen. But anyways, folks, we do have some other... before we jump into the copyright portion of the talk, we have a few things to jump into. First, a reminder. Haunt Chat Live.
Yes.
By the time this goes live, we'll have done it.
Right.
But you can go catch the recap.
Yeah.
I'm sure we're going to have been just totally awesome, knocked it out of the park. It's going to be great. But yeah, we will be on there, this weekend. We're recording it early because we have company coming in. So what you need to do, since we've already done it now in your time, is go to hauntchatlive.com. That'll redirect to their Facebook page. You can watch the video there. Hopefully you joined us live and you learned from the previous episodes when to do it, because I'm not repeating it here because it'd be kind of silly.
Yeah.
Make sense?
There's not time traveling yet.
Not yet.
Only forward. There is forward time
traveling. We're all time traveling forward.
Exactly.
We're just doing it exactly at the 1 minute per minute. Anyways, so yeah, on that note, definitely go check out the video if you hadn't. I'm sure we were great. Mm-hmm. Conference reminders. It's an odd episode. I think that means I start, correct? Or is that...
No. I'm the oddball.
Oh, you're the oddball. Okay, that's yeah. Fitting enough. Go ahead.
Get it. Exactly.
See, I don't even know who I am anymore. I'm going to be wandering the desert with a long beard and a torn shirt trying to figure out who I am.
No. Yeah. All right. April 13th through the 15th. So coming up very soon, we have West Coast Haunters Convention in Portland, Oregon, Doubletree Hotel, Portland, Touring Milburn's Haunted Manor, also includes a costume ball, a silent auction, and the Nightmare After West Coast Haunters Convention Film Festival with secret film selections. I hope that Fist of Jesus is in it.
Oh, God.
Because that was awesome.
Yeah, it's close enough to Easter to justify it. Fist of Jesus would be an excellent choice.
HauntersConvention.com for more on that.
It's only 14 minutes, guys. You can sneak it in between films.
And it's on Vimeo.
It's freely available, legally available. It's awesome. Check that out at home. And I happen to... Not with kids around. Absolutely. Well, it's a horror movie. But I happen to know, on good authority from several sources, the exact list of films they're doing. No, I don't. Okay, I'm just...
Yeah,
I'm lying.
Yeah.
All right.
You have no scoop.
I have no friends.
You haven't even scooped yourself this week.
All right. Oh, no, no. Shade being thrown early this week, folks. Mm. All right, after that, May 18th through the 20th, Halloween Show and National Haunters Convention presents Halloween Boardwalk Empire in Atlantic City, New Jersey at the Showboat Convention Center. Features Zombie Volleyball, a Hearst Show, and a Mardi Gras themed costume ball. Learn all the details at HalloweenShow.com.
All right, May 25th through the 27th. Midwest Haunters Convention, Columbus, Ohio at the Greater Columbus Convention Center, featuring a masquerade party and a zombie walk. Pre-convention bus tour with eight haunts. Lessons in Fear, Ohio State Reformatory, Rotten Manor, St. Lucifer's Scream Park, Erebus, and more. It also stops in hell for ice cream, because, you know, you
gotta get ice cream in hell. Come on,
exactly.
Dude.
MidwestHauntersConvention.com for more on that.
All right. June 22nd to the 23rd in Ulster Park, New York. It's premier haunted attractions tour and education series. It'll be at the Super 8 Kingston, touring the Headless Horseman and all seven of its attractions. Headless Horseman, Erebus...
Yeah.
We gotta get out to more conferences, man.
We do.
We're missing out. Full itinerary TBA Premier Haunt Tour.com.
All right. July 27th through the 29th. It is Room Escape Conference and Tour in Nashville, Tennessee at the Music City Center. Tour info is still TBA, but you can find out when it becomes available at RoomEscapeShow.com.
And finally for this week, July 28th and the 29th in Long Beach, California. It's Midsummer Scream! Eek! At the Long Beach Convention Center, most of the info still TBA. This one is a long way out, folks, but you can keep up to date at midsummerscream.org. .org.
Mm-hmm.
Orgy. Alright, guys. So, copyright and haunters. You know what? I think, honestly, the conversation about Pennywise is a great place to start. Just because that did catch so much fire.
It did. And it's not going to go away because they're making more movies.
Yes.
So he's going to be a character for a while.
Yeah, that much is obvious and probably very much a part of our reality. And this is something that I've noticed a lot of haunted attractions do. And it's frustrating, not just from a copyright standpoint, but from a creativity standpoint.
Yeah.
Where they chase whatever the big scary celebrity is. They try to bring Pennywise and they get Freddy, they get Jason.
Right.
The other guys, and A, which we're going to talk about in a minute, it's a copyright problem, but it's also a creativity problem because those things are going to come and go.
Yeah.
If you create something that's truly yours, you can ride that puppy into the sunset.
You can.
I mean, House of Shock rode their IP for 25 years.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you can say what you want about how the story got a little repetitive at the end, but hey, everyone knew who the characters were. You know what I mean?
Right.
We knew who Belial was. We knew who the Reverend was. We knew all these people.
Yeah.
We knew who they were, what they were there for. They told a compelling story. It worked well. So, yeah, you get to write it. So, something to think about in addition to this. Now, I guess real fast, we should cover why I'm talking about this. I know I've mentioned it a few times in the podcast before, but like many haunters, i.e. most haunters,
yeah,
especially home haunters, I have a day job.
Yeah.
And my day job is I am a copyright and plagiarism expert witness and consultant.
Yes.
That is a very weird job. In fact, I am the only one I know in the world that does this.
Yeah.
My primary business these days is copyright and plagiarism expert witness work, testifying in court cases and things like that. But I also do content tracking, content enforcement, content removal. And if you want to know more about what I do at my day job, check out my main site at plagiarismtoday.com. That's PLAGIARISM. Yes, I know. Nobody can spell plagiarism.
It'll be in the show notes.
Some dumbass decided I had to make that my domain. What was it? 15, near 15 years ago now? No, we're in 2018, so 13 years ago now.
Right.
Damn near 13 years ago now. I also have the business site, which is copybyte.com, copybyte.com. Once again, show notes. Go there and check it out. Feel free to reach out to me there if you have questions on what we're talking about, too.
Yeah.
This is, my day job.
Yeah, something specific to you? Let us know.
So, what we're going to do in this episode is, I've given multiple talks at haunted attraction conventions on copyright and trademark for haunting. You might have noted we're just doing copyright this time around.
Yes.
One of the reasons is because we don't have the full hour.
Right.
Because we do conference reminders and others, but also because I want this to be a more focused conversation.
Yeah.
And also, we have someone we want to bring in on the trademark side, someone that's a little more knowledgeable. Copyright's really my turf.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the basics of copyright. Let's begin there. And actually, another thing I'm going to do in the show notes, I forgot to mention this, is I'm going to put up the slides from my latest talk at HauntCon. I did not actually do that. I put up the 2016 ones I did. I did not put up the 2018 ones. I'm going to put up the 2018 ones for you guys in the show notes. I'm going to link to it somewhere so that way you can go through it. And we're actually going to go through the slides if you want to, you know, pretend like you're in elementary school or something again.
Yeah.
We're going to start with slide 5.
So basically, pull them up and follow along.
Yeah, pull them up, follow along. The link will be in the show notes, and I'll do a beep or something whenever we're changing. I don't know. So, slide 5, basics of copyright. Beep! Going to
I don't think that's going to work.
Okay.
I don't know. It might.
It might. Am I the only one old enough to remember doing that? I was the slide operator listening for the beep, beep. Then you fall asleep because the monotone voice of the presentation.
Yeah.
Yeah, I shouldn't have been trusted with that task ever. All right. The basics of copyright. Okay, this is the definition of copyright according to the U.S. Copyright Office. It says, copyright is a form of protection provided by the laws of the United States, Title 17 of the U.S. Code, to the authors of quote-unquote original works of authorship, including literary, dramatic, musical, artistic, and certain other intellectual works. So basically, it is a protection that's provided by the code and the legal code, and it is actually in the Constitution. Amazingly enough,
yeah,
it is mentioned in the Constitution. Getting a little, you know, featuring tag there. So yeah, boop. So what does copyright protect? Well, it basically protects creative works that are fixed into a tangible medium of expression. That includes literary works, musical works, dramatic works, choreography, pictorial graphic works, motion pictures, sound recordings, and architecture. Not included in that list are vessel hull designs, a very, very specific, oddly complicated area, I'm not actually making that up,
yeah,
of copyright law, and a handful of other smaller areas like that one. Now, one of the things to remember is that copyright is federal protection only. Since 1978, with the latest major copyright act, There is no more state copyright law unless, of course, we're dealing with pre-1972 something. Well, Jesus Christ. Nothing gets to be easy.
No. And if you're working in a haunt, you might be using some pre-1972 recordings.
So, yeah, but in general, it's federal protection only, and it transfers to a creator or an employer. Now, this is important for haunts, because volunteers are not employees.
Right.
This obviously is an aside into, like, employment law, but if an employee creates something as part of their employment...
Right.
And, you know, basically they're doing it as part of their job... The employer owns the copyright in that.
Yes, especially if it's explicitly stated in their hiring contract, which it should be.
Which it should be, even though it isn't necessary if they're an employee.
Right.
Now, if they are a contractor...
Or a volunteer.
Or a volunteer, it gets significantly more complicated very quickly. Basically, in those situations, you need to create a work-for-hire arrangement... And you may not even be able to do that depending upon the type of work you're creating and how you're creating it.
Yeah.
So, just something to think about, especially with volunteer work and especially without a contract, you may not own what your own staff creates.
Right. So, hey, I've got this, you know, great kid. He's taking graphic design. He just made me a logo.
Yeah.
Can I use the artwork for that?
Yes, you can use it.
Do I own it?
No, you do not own it. If he makes you, and this is going to be getting into something we talk about a little bit later, actually, where if he makes it for you and gives it to you for a purpose, that's known as an implied license. Even if you don't have a contract, his behavior is acting in such a way that you can use it for the intended capacity. If he intended you to use it on the website or in flyers, you're free to use it. But that doesn't mean you own it. Mm-hmm. Which means he could be free, theoretically at least, to resell it elsewhere or to do other things with it. You do not have that sole control over it because, as we're going to get into, we'll also discuss exactly what copyright protects and what it doesn't protect. In fact, we'll start with what it does not protect in the next slide. So, boop. it does not protect names. Names are covered under trademark. It does not protect ideas. Those are covered under patent law. It doesn't cover procedures or system that's also patents. Interestingly enough, it doesn't cover any work of the U.S. federal government.
Right.
Because those are automatically placed into the public domain. It does not protect fashion designs. It can protect images and like art on fabric. So if it were like, you could like hang it on a wall.
Right.
It could be protected, but the actual cut, the look, the style, that is not protected. And it also... does not protect works that lack a requisite level of creativity. The ideal example of that is a phone book.
If you remember what a phone book is.
Yeah, I know. Okay. And it's not
We're going to have to get a better one for modern days.
You know, that's unfortunately the case law on it, though. The Feist cases dealt with phone books.
Yeah. It's because it's out of date. Just a little bit.
But the example remains intact because a phone book is nothing but an alphabetic listing of names and numbers. There's no creativity in assembling it. It's a lot of goddamn work,
right?
But it's no creativity. Copyright affixes to the creativity. Okay, so boop. So these are the rights that you get with a copyright. You hold a copyright to something. The first and most obvious right you get is the right to reproduce a work.
Yeah.
That's duh. It's kind of in the name. Copyright. The right to copy. I don't really know, you know, how much more obvious that one could have been.
But, right.
To prepare derivative works. J.K. Rowling, when she finished that first Harry Potter book, not only did she have the right to control over her publisher, in this case, have the right to control who got to copy it and sell it and so forth, but she also was the only one that could make sequels based upon it.
Hmm.
Now, that right to make derivative works is a bit tricky because you get in some gray areas. Like, there's a big difference between writing Shmeri Shmodder and the Knowledgeable Stone versus just writing another book about a boy wizard, you know, who goes off to a wizarding school and does wizard stuff. There's a difference there.
And I'm sure that you have, you know... several articles on plagiarism today going not only into that, but also into fan fiction.
Yes.
So if you were doing homages.
homages. Yeah.
To certain things, you might want to check into that.
Yeah, fan fiction is actually one of the most relevant areas of case law for haunted attractions. That's actually an excellent point, because in fan fiction online in general, there's an unwritten rule, at least for most creators. The exception is like Anne Rice and so forth, who don't even allow this, where fan fiction is tolerated, maybe not loved, but tolerated as long as no one's earning a profit.
Right.
The minute you try to put your Star Wars fan fiction on Amazon, though,
yeah.
Believe me, that actually happened.
Yes. Yes, that was shut down.
That was
you
shut down.
You couldn't see the shutting down.
I made a clapping sound.
I know.
It was shut down. So the point of the matter is that was shuttered pretty quickly. And obviously, haunts are going to run into similar issues, because if you bring Jason, Freddy, Pennywise, whatever into your haunt, that in a weird way is a form of fan fiction, and you are doing it for profit.
Yep.
So moving on, the next rite is to distribute a work, which is an interesting one if you think about it, because it seems like you don't really, you know, need that with a copyright.
Right.
Because you already have the right to make a copy, but there are situations where you can distribute a work without making a copy. An excellent example, posting it online.
Yeah.
If you post a copy online, yes, you've made one copy, but the real issue is that you've distributed it to an audience that, you know,
much
what I mean?
Wider.
That didn't have availability to it. Public display or performance. This one mostly deals with plays and movies and things and songs. And that you cannot take my, like, if I wrote a play, I can tell you whether you have the right to actually perform it.
Right.
If I have a song, I have the right to say whether or not you can play it in your venue.
Yeah.
Even if you don't make a copy, the mere fact you're displaying it or publicly performing it can be a copyright infringement.
Right, and that can get tricky with music, especially if you, you know, there's another, I'm sure there's another article about
there
ASCAP.
Are 3,000 articles, literally, on Plagiarism Day, Crystal.
I know.
It's a safe bet there's one on this.
Well, I don't know. It was a safe bet there was a Haunt Weekly on copyright, and there wasn't.
Yeah. That's what we're going to do now. We're going to fight.
ASCAP and BMI, though, for music licensing and how it can go wrong and what it means to have it. Yeah. And also, if you have a radio station come out, you still have to have those licenses.
Yeah, that's something we'll... I think we have to discuss it in a more detail in just a minute. But it's one of the things to worry, concern yourself with, because the public display performance license for music affixes to the location,
mm-hmm.
not to who's like actually doing it. So a DJ comes out, he doesn't have to get the license to publicly display and perform the songs.
Right.
He has to legally own the music, but he doesn't have to get the license to publicly display. That's the venue's job, i.e. your job, which is really, really weird, because if you, as a band, for example, go and do cover songs at a bar, you're okay, but the bar better have its ass kept and BMI license and CSAC and so forth. So, yeah, moving on. There are limitations to copyright, though. There are some very important ones. The one you hear all the time by angry YouTubers who are ticked off that their videos got taken down is fair use. We're not going to go too deep into fair use, because honestly, that could be a whole hour unto itself, and we're already 25 minutes into this.
Yeah.
But, yeah, fair use, there are four factors in it. The purpose and character of the use, that means what are you trying to do with it? Is your use educational? Is your use, you know, what are you trying to accomplish? And the biggest element there is whether the use is transformative. Are you trying to make something new? Or are you trying to do something that competes or replaces the original work directly? The nature of the copyrighted work, that one is largely meaningless. It deals with whether the work is published or unpublished. Because theoretically, unpublished works get greater protection than published works. But honestly, I wouldn't worry too much about that one. The amount and the substantiality of the portion taken. There's a big difference between taking 8 lines in a 10-line poem and 8 lines in a novel.
Yeah.
You know, basically, you have to think about that. Once again, it's not necessarily the biggest factor. Factors 1 and 4 are the ones that courts are really looking at right now. but that's still one that is weighed. And the fourth factor is the effect of use upon the potential market. Now, this is very important. Fair use is an area of copyright law that's under a lot of flux right now. There's actually a lot of things going on here. But this one doesn't just limit itself to the impact it has on the market the work is in already. For example, if you going back to Harry Potter, I don't know why I always pick on Harry Potter when I do these talks, but it's like my first leap to. If you go back to before there were Harry Potter movies, and there was a time there was not Harry Potter movies, or if you, is there a Harry Potter play? I haven't heard about there one. Okay, so if you go and you make a Harry Potter Broadway performance, you can't say, well, we're not hurting the market for it because they're not in that market. Well, they could be. Right. Very easily in that market. And they could have licensed it, they could have entered it, and that is their right. So it's not just the market they're in, it's the potential market that has to be discussed and thought about in that one. Whether you're hurting it or helping it. You know, and this is like, think about the difference between like what I just described with the Broadway play versus a review of the book.
Okay.
A review of the book, theoretically, is helping the potential market, because you're discussing it and you're letting people know who might be interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
Where a Broadway play obviously is hurting it because it's preventing them from entering into a market that they might have had great interest in doing so. Just an example. Copyright does expire if it is a work of individual authorship, i.e. you, me, or Tommy McGee. It's 70 years after the death of the individual. It's kind of morbid, but the clock doesn't start till you die.
You know, we've got a lot of undead that work in this air industry.
Yeah, I do not know how this applies to zombies. I have not... Zombies and vampires. There are no court cases on those. So, I guess keep your eyes peeled for litigation in that area.
All right.
And if it's... I guess they might go to the corporate rules, which is 95 years after publication.
Mm-hmm.
So, there you go. So yeah, that's the basics of copyright as we're going to discuss here. But what I'm going to do now is I'm going to jump to slide 20, which is where we talk about the big issues that haunts face. And we're going to probably do a fair amount of touching on both copyright and trademark here, but we'll keep it to the copyright side. So where does this apply to haunted attractions is the next obvious question. And the answer is everywhere.
Yeah.
It's really kind of amazing. And the first area, from 20 to 21, is movie characters and scenes.
Mm-hmm.
This is huge, and I'm really amazed our industry has not had bigger problems in this space.
Me too.
And I think I know why. And it's kind of an embarrassing reason, and that is we're not worth dealing with most of the time.
Yeah.
Either we don't get known or caught, or when we are caught, we're just not worth doing anything about. But movie characters are copyright protected. You can copyright a character. So Freddy, Jason, Pennywise, all that stuff, they're copyright protected.
Mm-hmm.
And when you use them in your haunt, you can... They can come after you because you're using it without permission. You're using it for a commercial purpose. You're basically, you know, setting yourself up to be potentially sued.
But I'm not recreating a movie. I'm just using a character in one scene that's not even a scene from the movie.
It doesn't matter. The character itself is a copyrighted work independent.
Okay.
Independent of the film. I know you're playing devil's advocate and doing that. And I know what you're doing.
That's fine.
But the point is, and Leonard Pickle actually tells a pretty entertaining story.
I mean, yes.
Every corner, I'm asking him about the Freddy haunt that he tried to do one year, which basically he had the idea that he was going to do an all Freddy haunt.
Yep.
Everybody in the haunt was going to be Freddy. There's going to be fat Freddy's, going to be thin Freddy's, tall Freddy's, short Freddy's. Everybody's going to be a Freddy.
Yep.
And I think it's Universal, right?
Yeah.
But the owners came in and said, no. They cease and desisted him. And, like, this happened apparently, like, a couple of nights before opening.
Yeah.
Which, that's the thing. It's, like, word only reached them, like, right before he opened. And so, basically, put the kibosh on the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just, squashed it. So, it does happen in extreme cases. I mean, that being said, if you do have that Pennywise animatronic in your haunt, the odds of actually getting in legal trouble are pretty slim. And you might say to yourself, well, you know, it's something we bought. Well, it wasn't officially licensed merchandise to begin with. And even if it was, it depends upon the license of the work. I mean, a good example of the problem here is people say, well, we bought the masks and the costumes, saying we can't use them. We bought these officially licensed stuff. Well, the implied license, those are not for commercial use. Typically, if you check the packaging on those, they'll have some warning that it's for non-commercial use or for private use only or something like that.
Right.
It's not meant to be used in a commercial setting. But even then, there's a big difference between having someone in the costume and having the character. If I go to a Halloween party in the costume,
yeah,
that's very, very different in terms of, like I said, effect upon the potential marketplace. For example, looking at the fair use situation. Mm-hmm. Because they make a lot of money licensing these characters or using them in their attractions.
Yeah.
And like Halloween Horror Nights and so forth.
Mm-hmm. What if I just have a red balloon?
You know, that one you might be able to get away with. Just because that could be seen as an homage. That could be seen as something small enough to be a fair use. That could be seen as that. But once again, I'd have to see how it's used in the exact attraction. You're still playing with fire there. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how smart that is. And like I said, a lot of it depends upon your intended use. Is it an homage? Is it meant to be funny?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Is it meant to be a little Easter egg type thing? Or is it meant to promise, like, Pennywise is there? You know?
Yeah.
Part of it does rely upon your intent. It's complicated. And I should have warned before I jumped into all this. I realized I didn't. I am a copyright expert witness and all that, but I'm not a lawyer.
Yeah.
I just realized I did not actually put that in. I never said I was a lawyer, but I'm going to make it clear I'm not a lawyer.
Right.
At the same time, now that we're actually getting into the nuts and bolts of this. So, keep that in mind. But yeah, when you're playing with characters, you're playing with fire. And that is doubly, triply, quadruply so when you put said characters in your advertising and in, God oh, help God. Us, all your merchandise.
Yeah, we have seen that time and time again. Flyers, t-shirts with copyrighted characters. And, you know, we're a creative industry, and I know that we've talked about this before. And I think it was episode 31 on our process.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, if you create it, you own it.
Yes.
You can go after other people if they try to take it.
Yeah, you know, which end of this do you want to be on?
Yeah.
Is a good way to think about it. Do you want to be on the end of it where you're worried about other copyright holders bringing the hammer down on you? Or do you want to be on the end of it where you know you have total control over it, you own it, and you get to be the one chasing down others that misuse it?
Yeah.
I mean, I've got a flyer. I think you picked it up. It was at HauntCon for a haunt that shows, like, Chucky, Jason, and Freddy holding hands and... And I'm like, sweet babe, mother of God, how have you not been sued?
Yeah, and we know a lot of people who do this, and we don't understand that.
Yeah, I don't understand it from a creative perspective, and I don't understand it from a copyright perspective.
Right.
We can do better. We can create our own villains.
Yeah.
We can create villains that are relevant to our specific areas.
Right. Well, and not only that, but... There is some comfort in seeing something familiar. So if all you've got is things people already know, then that's going to be more of a comfort than a scare.
Yeah, I know Freddy and Jason aren't real.
Yeah.
I know they're movie characters. Everyone knows that.
Exactly.
I might not know if your local boogeyman is real. And I mean, I live in New Orleans, man. We got enough boogeymen from our history. And, by the way, can't copyright facts.
Right.
While we're on that subject, you can't copyright factual information. So we got enough boogeymen from our history that are copyright-free because they're real.
Yeah.
That I can play off of and do fictionalized accounts of. So, yeah. Something else to ponder is, and this is Boop, by the way, your haunt name and logo and your other creative stuff you put on your website and you put out there in your promotional and marketing material. Long and short of it is, try to be original here. Last I checked, and this does delve into trademark more, there was something like 28 haunts called the Chamber of Horrors.
Yeah.
And including one here in New Orleans.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's why you chose it, because we know them.
Well, that, and I remember arriving at HauntCon and seeing people with Chamber of Horror shirts and getting excited seeing some of the people in our local community.
Yeah.
And then realizing, no, they were from, like, Michigan or some crap.
Yeah. Somewhere else.
You know, they were in the, that was when we were at HauntCon Baton Rouge that happened, I think. So, yeah, be creative. Make sure that, definitely make sure there are no haunts and nothing in your area with a similar name.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, just be original. There's enough room here. Okay, another copyright issue, and this one's solely copyright music. If you have music in your haunt, this country is weird. And I say that a lot, but this time I've got very good reason to say it.
Yeah.
Okay, with every musical work you listen to, whether it's on Spotify or whatever, every song you listen to, there's two copyrights. There's a copyright in the composition, i.e. the stuff you can write on paper that includes the lyrics, the notes, you know. And when Sweet Caroline has the bomb, 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 it's written somewhere in a composition.
Yeah.
So that part has one copyright. Whoever wrote that, the songwriter, holds that. And then there's the song, the copyright to the actual recording, the part that's put to tape or MP3 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's a separate recording.
Right.
That is a separate copyright. And that often has different copyright holders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, take, for example, a lot of bands will hire songwriters to come in and write songs for them. Well, the songwriter owns the composition, but when they perform it, they hold the right to the recording.
Yeah.
Bands, and the example that immediately leaps to mind for some reason, like Metallica, that write and perform their own stuff, they own both.
Yeah.
So it can be the same person, but it's often different people.
Right.
Like, Britney Spears doesn't write her own music, I don't think. Or at least she didn't.
Right.
And I am obviously dating myself here by talking about Metallica and Britney Spears. I feel so old right now.
Aurelio Voltaire does.
Oh, yes. Aurelio Voltaire does write and perform his own music. Except when he does his covers. He does a couple of covers.
Yes, he does.
But other than that, yes. Okay. In our country, there is no public performance right for the sound recording. I don't know why. I have tried to find the answer to that one. I've got nothing.
Yeah, that's weird.
I've got literally nothing to give you on that one. I don't know why. There's actually some legal efforts to change that, especially when it comes to radio play.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just not there. So whenever you play a song in a store, whenever you play it in your haunt, whenever you play it on the radio even...
Mm-hmm.
There is an exception here for digital streaming, which is a very bizarre one that I won't go too deep into. But services like, I think it's like Pandora and so forth,
mm-hmm.
have had to pay these royalties. I'd have to go back and check that. But there is a digital streaming exemption there. But as far as like what we're talking about here with haunted attractions, there isn't one. So you have to license the music for the, you have to license the composition, but not the recording. Weird. I don't get it, but you do. All right.
So what if I hire someone to, you know, make sounds for my haunt?
Well, that is fine as long as, you know, they use original sounds and they use original material.
Mm-hmm.
And you get the license to actually use it when you pay for it.
How do I know it's exclusive?
That's going to be in your contract. You got to get the contract. Get the papers together. Get the papers. It's all about the papers. And it blows my mind. We're a handshake industry a lot of times.
Right.
This is an area you should... Copyright in general should never be a handshake thing.
No. Well, and the other thing to remember is if you are a musician yourself,
mm-hmm.
and you're making music for your haunt, and you bring someone in to play other instruments...
Yes.
They also, if yes. I'm not mistaken,
they will own
have
part of the comp. They will own part of the right. If you write, if they write the song, they contribute to the writing of it. They'll own part of the composition, and if they contribute to the recording, they'll own part of the recording.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things to think about. That's another issue that's actually a really good point, is collaborative work. Joint authorship, as it's called in copyright, which is an issue where when you and I are doing this podcast right now, this is a work of joint authorship.
Yeah.
Because we have both contributed something to this podcast, which means we own 50% of the copyright, because we don't have, you know, we don't have any contract between us giving up the rights any differently. And that's perfectly fine. But then that would be true even if, for example, and this is not how it goes, if one of us did like 95% of the work.
Yeah.
If like one of us, and I'm not saying who, like did all the show notes, the editing, the uploading, basically did everything, and the other person barely spoke and barely contributed anything. And no, I'm not saying anything. Crystal's giving me a look. But so, even if the workload is unbalanced, it's a 50-50 split.
Yeah.
And this comes up a lot in book writing, because sometimes people will contribute only minor edits or contribute small portions of it and walk away with 50% of the rights to it.
Right. So that goes into your story for your haunt, too.
Yeah. Be thinking about that. When you work with other people, bear in mind, unless you specify otherwise, they will own an even share. If it's three people, it's 33, 33, 33. If it's four people, it's 25. And if you can't figure out the math for yourself, just get a calculator.
So before you work with anyone, get your contracts and work for hires in place.
Yeah. But anyways, getting back to music, which is where we got off on that aside.
Sorry.
Basically, you want to remember three names. BMI, ASCAP, and CSAC. They're all acronyms. BMI stands for Broadcast Music Incorporated. ASCAP stands for the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers. And CSAC stands for Screw You. I can't remember what CSAC stands for. I'm pretty sure you're going to look it up for me, because I'm in the full screen mode.
Yeah. But
I think it's the Society of European Songwriters.
Society of European Stage Authors and Composers.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
I was getting there. I was close.
You were.
I was getting there. I was really close. But yeah, that's the smaller of the three. That's the less important of the three in terms of like the library they have. But anyways, these are organizations. Basically what they do is they license the compositions for use in a place like a haunted attraction. And here's the thing. They base the amount they're going to charge you on your estimated foot traffic for the entire year. If you are a seasonal haunt and you only get that foot traffic over 6 months, that's going to be a cheap license.
Yeah.
Cheap license.
Yeah. At a haunt con, the one that was in Mobile, I believe.
Yeah.
Someone mentioned
in Birmingham.
Birmingham. Someone mentioned it was less than $80 for theirs.
Yeah.
For all three.
That sounds perfectly possible and reasonable.
Yeah.
And basically what this does is it means that they can't come after you for playing music. And this licenses functionally every song you can think of.
Yep.
It is, you're going to have a damned hard time finding a song that is publicly available, like on CD or, you know, Spotify or whatever, that isn't licensed through one of these three services. Mm-hmm. So this would give you pretty much the entire music library you can think of and ever hope to use. And it's peace of mind, all for what will probably be the cost of a few tickets.
Right.
Just saying. It's a beautiful thing. I highly recommend it. Now, if you are a home haunter, you do not have to do this. This only applies, if you're a true home haunter, you do not have to do this. It only applies to commercial establishments, and that also includes charities in this case. So basically, if you're taking ticket money in, if it's a commercial establishment, you need to do this. All right, another area, boop, is your website and social media. Definitely keep track of what you post on whoever it is that's posting website and social media. Make sure they're aware of these issues and not posting things that are copyright infringing.
Yeah.
The big issue there has less to do with likely being sued, but with people ordering takedowns of your posts and possibly getting, you know, kicked off Twitter or Facebook, etc. So watch out.
Or, you know, taking your entire site down.
Yeah.
We might have done that to some people.
Yeah, we did.
Not in the haunt industry. Let me put that out there.
No haunts were harmed in the making of this copyright enforcement.
Yes.
But
no, I mean, we...
Other
we,
industries.
You have a client who I help with.
Yeah.
Who has his marketing material taken quite often.
Yes. And we shut down those unethical competitors with frightening ease and regularity.
Yeah.
I think that's about right.
Yeah.
All right. Number five. Now the next one is merchandising. Mm. I love that slide. That's probably my favorite slide in the whole book. If you're not pulling it, I'll describe it. It's yogurt from Spaceballs with the Spaceballs, the flamethrower on the slide. I love that movie so much. But yeah, merchandising, you have to be doubly, triply careful what you put on your merchandise because this is stuff, A, that's going to be extremely public. B, is the absolute epitome of the term commercial use.
Mm-hmm.
And you basically blew yourself out of the water on any fair use conversation. So, yeah, be very, very careful what you do with your merchandising. Also, in the same vein, boop, next slide, your marketing. Don't forget that this, once again, is the public, it's the most commercial, it's the stuff that's out there. Watch yourself. Don't use characters. Don't use, you know, images that you don't have the copyright to or don't have a license to. Honestly, as far as images go, if you want free images, go to pixabay.com. That's pixabay.com. It's a public domain stock photo site. Mm-hmm. Everything's free to download and free to use without attribution. Go hog wild. Find stuff and enjoy it. There are a few other sites like it. There's also a lot of cheap stock photo sites out there for like a couple bucks an image.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Avanto Marketplace has, I can't remember what theirs is. I think it's like Pick Jungle or something like that.
Yeah.
I've only been in there a few times. But yeah, basically, you know, you can find all of these cheap stock photography websites that will let you use the images with, you know, either little to no cost. I do most of my stuff, like, in this presentation. Other than, the still from Spaceballs, which I'm pretty sure is a fair use.
Yeah.
Pretty much everything here comes from Pixabay and other free stock photo websites.
Yeah, I use Pixabay all the time, including for horror-related stuff.
Yes. And the final one to remember and to keep your eye on, so boop, next slide, is your actors. Remember that they represent you. Impress upon them the importance of, A, sticking to whatever is original and not just copying Freddy or Jason. It's really, really frustrating because I've actually seen this happen where actors kind of go rogue.
Yeah.
And they decide they're going to put on a Freddy costume or a hockey mask or whatever and pretend to be Jason for a night.
Yeah.
Yeah, keep an eye on that and stop it.
Mm-hmm.
For all the reasons we mentioned, that's just it. This is the thing that's so frustrating about copyright and haunting, is following copyright law, especially within the confines of the creativity of your haunt itself. I understand if you find the music thing a little frustrating. Hopefully, though, it's so cheap, it really isn't much of a burden to you.
Right. Hopefully you're doing well.
Hopefully you're doing well enough. That ASCAP BMI license isn't going to be a burden to you. And believe me, it's worth it because I don't think these guys target haunts regularly, but it does happen.
Yeah.
So just bear that in mind. But yeah, it doesn't, but following copyright and being original and not using other people's stuff isn't just ethically the right thing to do. I think it's creatively the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
It makes your haunt much more effective whenever you're using something that is more relevant to you and your specific attraction and your specific location.
Right. And that's scary to your customers.
Exactly. I mean, if you've got, you know, Jason roaming the backwoods of Mississippi for some reason, it's weird. It's not the right place. It's not the right time. It doesn't make sense. It's not his environment.
Right.
It's a very, very bizarre thing, and it's a comforting thing to people because people know, like I said, these characters aren't real. They've seen the movies.
Mm-hmm.
You can make something that's even scarier, and you can make something that you can build off of year after year after year. Because here's the other thing. What happens when that IP, when that horror franchise goes a different direction? What happens right. when, in the next Halloween movie, Mike Myers is killed in an embarrassing fashion or something like that? And gets completely nerfed or something.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you were dependent upon Mike Myers, you're kind of hosed, aren't you?
Yeah. What about people who make their characters?
Like Japes?
Yeah, someone who makes a unique character, but maybe they've stayed at one haunt for a really long time.
Well, once again, like we talked about, if it's not a work for hire, which volunteer work it almost never would be,
mm-hmm.
They own it. They can take it and go elsewhere with it.
What if you hire them and they create it while they're working for you?
That would be different then. If they are an employee under employment law, then you as the employer would own that if they created it. And that's one of the things you're going to run into, like this weird squiggly trouble with. And it came up in a case involving the Bratz doll line, oddly enough.
Mm-hmm.
Is sometimes distinguishing what was created on the job versus not on the job can be very difficult.
Right.
But if it was truly created on the job, like working with you while they were on the clock, you would own that.
But if
they created it elsewhere and brought it in,
mm-hmm.
then they would probably still own it unless you arranged to transfer ownership of it somehow.
Gotcha.
So and that one gets into an admittedly gray area of the law in general.
Yeah.
Like I said, the MGA Bratz case dealt with that a lot because the creator of Bratz was working for Mattel.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, he came up with the idea, and there was a huge debate about whether or not he owned the right, had the rights to sell it. It is a big convoluted mess.
Yeah, it was.
And it went on for years.
It did.
I mean, granted, there's like literally millions and millions of dollars on the line. Those dolls are ungodly popular.
Yeah.
I don't understand this. But anyway, the main thing to think about, though, I guess the main takeaways here is don't use other people's IP in your haunt. It's not only bad from a legal perspective, but it's bad from a creative perspective. Be mindful about the music and just basically be mindful when you use other people's stuff, period. Whether it's images in a flyer, you know, music in a TV ad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whenever you're using other people's creations in your work, be mindful about it. And be thinking about, A, trying to obtain a license for it at the very least. And if you're unable to, making sure, dead sure, that it's a fair use. And honestly, if you're going to try to play the fair use angle, in most cases, I would speak with an attorney first.
Yeah.
I would get someone to back you up there and make sure that it's a sanity check what you're thinking, basically. Well, that is all the time we have. I know it was a bit of a hodgepodge, but like I said, the talk I've done on this before has been targeted both copyright and trademark, so that made it a little more convoluted to get through this. But I think we got a pretty good overview and talked about some key issues here.
Mm-hmm.
So there we go. We've now actually done the copyright and haunting talk. I feel better now.
Good.
I feel significantly better.
Do you know who you are again?
No. I still don't. The fact we did parking 70 episodes ago is going to drive me bananas because I'm sitting there scrolling through, just triple checking we haven't done this, and I'm like, parking? Parking? The hell? Anyways, well, I think we're going to wrap this one up, though. So, look, until next time, if you haven't already, please do take a moment. Follow us on Twitter at Haunt Weekly. Follow us on Facebook at Haunt Weekly. Once again, tinyurl.com/Haunt Weekly is our YouTube channel. Subscribe to us there and also check out the archive of old videos. You can find our main site at hauntweekly.com. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, all the other places, and Google Play, everywhere the finer podcasts are distributed. They haven't kicked us out yet. I don't know how. But until next time, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this was Haunt Weekly, episode 123, doing copyright and haunting. I still can't believe it.
No.
We will see you guys next time with the news. See you then.